So now we're recording. Fantastic. So welcome again to Office Hours. If you have any questions, please drop them in the Office Hours chat. That is two channels above this one. Office-Hours, drop any questions you have in there. I did just check the question sheet as well. I keep forgetting to check, and there are no questions locked there, so we're good on that. Until there are any questions, we're going to sit here in unimaginable pain and silence. So get those questions in. For those just joining, welcome to Office Hours. If you have any questions you'd like to ask me about NEOS, please drop them in the Office Hours channel. That is two above the current one that you're in. Any questions, go for it. Okay, so we have some questions coming in. That's great. So we have a question from Epic Eastern that says, what's stopping you from working on NEOS? Is it legal mumbo-jumbo? And what if your modifications are completely local? There's still problems with that. There are no problems of either of that. Like, I can technically work on NEOS if I would like to. We just can't release it right now. I do still work on NEOS. I have the code base open most days to just answer questions here. Someone's like, how does XYZ component work? And I've never heard of that component in my life. You bet I'm going to go to the code and read how it works. It's really useful in that case to sort of, you know, just be like, cool, I can open the code and take a look. I have some local changes as well that I keep seeing. For those who use version control systems, I go into the code base and I look at my Git changes and I'm just like, whoa, there's a lot of changes on some files here, and I'm forgetting what those are. So sometimes I commit them into branches so that I've got a list of branches I need to push once we're able to make updates. Like, I just saw one which was another invalid default quaternion. We had a bunch of components which would default to invalid quaternions. Float queues. They would default to invalid float queues. And we were fixing up a bunch, but we missed some, and people reported that, and I'm like, that's an easy fix. So I've got like a bunch of those that I was just seeing. I'm like, what did I change in this file? I'm like, oh, I changed that to make it a valid float queue. Cool. Okay, next question. Now I've stopped saying that terrible word, float queue, from Lex, who says, what would be a good way of setting up a seamless transition between worlds for larger experiences? So the open world and focus world node are great when you combine them together, because the open world node allows you to sort of detect when a world is loaded. It's the only way that you can do that. I'm not quite sure how reliable that is, but you can totally do that. What I would recommend there is thinking about how you have someone start that transition is very important. I see lots of people who want world portals, you know, similar to VR chat's world portals. Those work well. What I suggest you do for those, though, is that you, when someone hits the portal, instead of just opening the world there or doing anything there, teleport them like under the map or something, put something on their head that looks like a loading screen, then trigger the load, and then focus the world once that loading has concluded. That way you emulate the process of them disappearing when they enter the portal, even if they're just sort of under the map, you know, flailing their arms around, etc. But then you can put that visual effect on top. I've seen a couple of sort of experiments with doing that with various visual effects. I'm sure I would love to see a few. So a few I'd like to see is, hey, remember the original long Stargate transition? They stopped doing it after like the first few episodes on the Stargate TV show. They did it both times there was a Stargate trip on the original film because it was very impactful. But on the actual show, it made no sense because they just kept doing it. If you watch Stargate as well, you'll notice the first couple of episodes, they have a frosty effect. Whenever people come through, they're like, oh, their like skin is frosty, like they've been out in a snowstorm or whatever, but they remove that afterwards, and they never really explain that. I mean, you can just sort of hand wave and say they fixed it, but that doesn't make sense for an outgoing trip, because the outgoing trip is like how it was intended to work. Right, you know, everything about like the Stargate command base is like hacked together because they didn't have like a complete system. But everything off world should be perfectly fine. So if it was like, yeah, they fixed it, doesn't make any sense. But anyway, so yeah, a good Stargate transition would be cool. I know that the I always forget the name of it, but it's like open every day. The headless session, which has swap spheres made by Ryuvi, would be another way to do a world transition. They're great. Swap spheres come from the game Abduction. You could also just do a standard loading screen. Just try some stuff out. Maybe I'll add that to my tutorial list. But you will need to use the node for that. There are components that can do world portal openings, but what they will do is load you into the world immediately. So what you'll see there is basically Similar to, this is another random tangent, but as we never know the questions, it's tangent prime time with Prime. If you just do a portal with the components for a world transition, they will instantly shell out the moment they touch the portal. And so it resembles that veil, I think it's called, in Harry Potter. It's Order of the Phoenix where it happens, where Sirius Black is down in the Department of Mysteries, I think it is, in the Ministry of Magic, and he just accidentally, I think he sort of knocked into it in the films, but in the book, I think he like accidentally ends up being sort of pushed into there. He falls into the veil and immediately turns into a ghost and just sort of disappears, and there's no real explanation of what magic is at play there, but like they know he's dead. That's what it looks like. They're just sort of like, they touch the portal and then they instantly turn transparent. And it's like, cool. And then they hang around there until they decide to close the world. Whereas if you manually use the open world and focus world nodes, you can actually do a full-on transition. You can start opening the world, teleport them under the ground, wait for it to load. Once it's loaded, close the world that they're in, focus the new world. A lot cleaner. Something that could also be cool is if you did like a level transition. Like, I know some games do level transitions weirdly, where they, like a good example being like one of the early Resident Evil games, they had that door opening animation. That was both to say like, hey, you're going through a door, and also to load another part of the map. Other games do it with, you know, corridors. You walk down this corridor and they realize like, hey, you're on like the cusp between two levels here, so we can load the next level. And if you turn around, just panic and unload that next level and load the previous level. But the corridor is like in both, so you can link those together. So again, you can make something seamless there. There's the Metal Gear Solid ladder climbing world. That'd be a good example. Like if you're halfway up the ladder, like load the top of the ladder. But if you're not, don't. Moving onwards to more questions here. Spec says the desktop view in the dash is great, but it gets pretty hard to read with screens that have especially wide resolutions. The dash seems to be hard-coded best fit 16:9 screens. Is there anything I could do as a user to make my admittedly silly 32:9 screen fit better in the dash or more more readable? The problem there that you have is that the headset itself isn't anywhere near 32:9. I guess making the dash bigger would allow for that, but you'd probably need like a non 16:9 dash size. There's probably a way to like resize the dash temporarily. I'm not sure if it would save, but that would give you the resolution there. What I wouldn't want to do is any sort of letterboxing where we try and squeeze that in and narrow it down, because you're just going to lose more detail. That's all I got for you. Make the dash bigger. You might be able to do that in game without any sort of modifications or anything like that. Just go ahead and inspect in user space, see if it saves. Otherwise, you'll have to go into Nia's modding land, see if you can get it done there. You basically need like a better rectangle that can then fit that in. And I think changing the size of the dash is probably the only way you're going to do that. Ramper has just asked for an RSS feed. I've got to scroll back because I linked one a while ago. I linked one. Yeah, it's here. I'll add it to the wiki if I remember. Oh, Froppy is, like, so fast. Yeah, there's the RSS feed. I will see if I can, like, put that on the wiki or something. I'll take a note and then inevitably forget, but I will take a note. Where are I? What is it, Tuesday? It is Tuesday. Add RSS link to Office Hours wiki. There we go. It's on my to-do list. Like, ultra-wides are always causing strange problems. I know in like some professional esports they're banned because the game handles them and does them really, really well, but the peripheral vision that you get is then an advantage, and then because not all people have them, they've just like banned them or something, which seems strange. I mean, if it's like pro esports, just buy everyone a giant monitor. If it has a benefit, go for it. I'm actually dealing with that problem right now in another sense as well, which is during the Steam sale, a game called Hydroneer was on sale, and it has multiplayer, but it doesn't have online multiplayer, so you have to do Steam Remote Play with a split-screen multiplayer. And so a friend has purchased the game, and I was about to purchase it until I realized there was no online multiplayer, so I saved my money, and now we play it split-screen over Steam Remote Play, but it's a split-screen, and so they have an ultra-wide, and they were trying to fit, like... this split-screen game on an ultra-wide, and it looks terrible. We got some solutions, and I'm mostly used to it. It's kind of strange. Sometimes I forget it's split-screen and end up trying to control both characters, even though I'm only one character. If the Hydroneer devs are listening, please add proper multiplayer, please.
They've quoted that they're not able to add proper multiplayer right now due to sort of resource constraints, which is perfectly understandable. It's a lot of endeavor to take, but you know, try, please, cry. So Rampa says remote play and the tech there is great. I agree, the tech there is great. The only thing I don't really like about remote play is it kind of feels like I lose control of my computer if I'm the host. Like it's an exchange, like it's something that you have to get used to. But like, you know, there's always a point where I need to like maybe alt tab and look something up. And if I alt tab, the other player loses control of the game. And so it feels like you're kind of holding your computer hostage a little bit. So it's a little bit weird. But it's really nice. Saves people money. Stuff like that. Next, we have a question from Lex, who says, the Dash uses modal overlays on UIX. Would it be a good idea to use those components for our own UIX pop-ups? Yes and no. The pop-ups are great, but you have little control over how they work because they use a couple of sort of delegate-y things. Now, I know mods can get you access to that, but like I wouldn't be sure if you would have the ability to control it exactly how you would like to. What I did for the MMC voting system, which does use a modal overlay, is I created a modal in the regular world browser and then like pulled quite brutally the entire modal out of the world manager and converted it to my own system that was powered by a dynamic variable. So it still like loads and looks exactly like the same modal that you have, but it doesn't use those modal components. It does use a lot of the sort of visual components of a modal. It just doesn't use the like Neos modal component, whatever it's called. Your approach might vary, but that's what I ended up doing. I did speak to Fruks at the time of developing it, and they said that the modal could be expanded to allow other users to, you know, have modals, use modals, etc., but that wasn't supported right now. Keep those questions coming. We have about 10 or so minutes left on the office hour segment. Sometimes I run over. That's usually because I'm ranting about cheese or something, but carry on. Hey, Kip has a question. Is there a way to use a material as a texture input for another material? The only way I've seen to do that is to use a camera. That happens a lot, like a lot more than you realize. Trying to think of some examples. Like NeoTOShop in the PolyLogics folder is a good example of that. That uses a camera to render the final composition. NeoTOShop is basically stacked brush pixels. So they have the sort of base texture at the back. And then in front of that are any number of sort of brush layers. And then on the front of that is a camera that's looking at all those layers combined. And so you remove that 3D effect of those stacked layers and get back to a flat image. Lex says, any curved UIX really? Yeah, the actual Dash does that same concept. What we do is we take a flat version of the Dash and then project it onto the curved plane mesh so it can be curved. I have the curvature set to 0 on my Dash because I can't really stand it. I know other people like it, but like I'm just like, what? So have a look at those. There's a couple of worlds that do it as well. Using the same concept as like build as NeoTOShop, build in Akita, an early world by myself that lets you sort of customize what your Akita model by Zab uses it. My MMC 2022 entry, untitled on purpose, uses it for the well poles that are in both sides of that room. Check that if you like. It's an artistic piece that is open for interpretation. Art is always subjective, so have fun. That uses it. Various other places use it. Vigilabo's water droplets. I know other people have done it, but like Vigilabo's is the one that comes to mind. If you go into their public folder, they've got a water example where you can kind of like put your hands in the water and it splashes a bit. That again uses a camera. Snow Globe of Working Snow, that also has it. That's how we do the like footprints in the snow thing. Moving onwards to Hack13's question, who says, I wanted to know if I wanted to hide a string inside a Neos that I want to pass to a WebSocket or something. I have seen the Cloudflares don't show their data to someone who isn't on the allowed list. Would you consider that a good way of hiding something like that? Example, an API key. No, I do not recommend any form of authentication in Logix or Neos at all right now. The only way I would like say it's acceptable is if you have a private world with one person in it. Otherwise, like, who knows what they're doing? You've also got the problem there of like, however secure it is, if it's, let's say it's an API key, let's say it's in a cloud variable, at a certain point, either via components or maybe a Logix ribbon, That value is extracted from that sort of, in quotes, secure environment that only one person can read and passed to a field which anyone can read. And so that's why it's not secure. Like, example here, like, say you did, I don't know, read cloud variable, and of course read cloud variable can only read like a user's value, for example, that you might think that's secure, right? Because only this user only has this value, and due to the cloud variable permissions, I've set it up so only the user can read their own value. That sounds kind of secure, but it's not, because that read cloud variable node then outputs just a standard string with no protection. And so let's say we then plug that read cloud variable node's output into, I don't know, a regular write node to then write it into a string register or whatever. That string register is just publicly readable. There are advancements in sort of the feature called hard permissions, which may allow for more sort of secure related things. But anything that has authentication, I don't recommend doing or trying to sort of work around it. A good example here being the MMC voting world. In the MMC voting world, I disable cloud avatars. I disable all locomotion except one. I disable tool shelves. I disable like basically everything. And even with that, it's still not secure. And that's why we have logging up the wazoo, right? I, at the end of every MMC voting, I go through the logs and I pair things up. Like a good example being, I can go through the logs of the session from the header server and I can say like, oh, hey, look, Prime joined at 1624. And then I look at my list of votes on the voting server and I'm like, Prime joined at 1624, and then he made three votes at 1624. Great, I can match those up and still be unsure because there's still some issues that might occur there, but I can still audit that and be like, ah, it looks like that makes sense, right? That makes sense. But like, if I see Prime joins at 1624, and then Fruxius made a bunch of votes, but Fruxius wasn't actually in the world at the time, then I'm like, looks like Prime was doing something weird. Better throw those votes out. So Hack 13 has gone to say that they have an intermediary API that holds the key, and the in Neos you just pass requests to it. That is good because you are in control there. Again, you can add like additional security. For example, the outgoing service that you're trying to connect to that needs an API key might have rate limits that you know you usually won't exceed, but maybe you put like slightly more strenuous or strict rate limits on your intermediary API because there is that level of sort of ambiguity about who's doing it, and that way you can protect your API key and your network from having too many requests compared to just going direct and stuff like that. You can always put that layer in the middle there and add a little bit more sort of scrutiny. Moving on to Lex's question, is there a good way of detecting when someone is live through components? I believe that there is a component for it. Excuse me a moment. The component is what drives the live badge above someone's head. The problem with that, though, is that if they are not using the mirror to display option on the streaming camera or something like that, or forcing that live badge on, which is another option, then they could be live just using the SteamVR mirror or the direct output of the monitor view, the desktop view of it. Kip says, good idea to like always assume that you're on camera. Absolutely. Always assume that you're on camera. I'm kind of sort of indoctrinated into that, which is strange. That came from the sort of the Mixer days when I worked at Mixer. It was like, hey, you know, everything you do, wherever you are, assume you're being recorded in the sort of streaming space. Less so in games, but like everywhere I use the name Rubble Prime, I'm like, yep, I'm being recorded. But you don't know about my alt accounts. Yeah. Gonna hack the matrix of my alt accounts. moving forwards to Lex, who says, same question as Bob, but detecting permission levels in world. For example, if you want to set up a builders only zone, you can't do that right now. Now, I know that someone in here is going to start typing about the two string node, and I get tired of talking about the two string node, but I'm gonna talk about it again because, hey, this is being recorded and anyone that listens will hear this spiel. Before a certain update, the two-string node would allow you to receive a text-based output from a user that included their permission level. Two-string is a debug process on much of programming. One second whilst I cough off, Mike. And so in programming, you use a two-string operator a lot for debugging and logging. So two-string would be like, I don't know what this is, dot two-string it, and it gives you lots of details. That process is designed to give you a text-based representation of the object at its current moment. It's not designed to pass that data back out into any other form. But what users were doing is running a bunch of substring operations on that two-string output, and it was causing a problem. That is not an intended way to use two-string. It never was. So the fact it worked was actually just a miracle. Like, just a miracle, right? It was just random. Fruks made edits to the two-string output to include that and had forgotten that he'd done that, and it was purely for logging. And so we changed that such that the two-string output is now more stable and will never change. And the response to that was, well, you remove the role information, and it's like, yeah, you shouldn't have had that in the first place. And people go like, well, why? And the reason is because, again, the security principle, you take a known object, which has a known property permission, and you change it to a string, and then you start doing operations on that string, substring, index of string, etc. And then out of that, you get a single string, which shows their permission level. That string could be intercepted via any number of mechanisms, points at the modding community, who are mostly good, by the way. This isn't a modding community is bad. This is just the modding community have the ability to do this. So should a bad actor, and again, not accusing the modding community of being bad actors, they are fantastic with the mods that they are producing, but a modding person could theoretically edit that string in place using a mod and give you a different output. So let's say you had a system where you're like, oh, if they're a builder, show this really sensitive piece of information or allow this sensitive access to the world. They could theoretically, again, not accusing anyone, don't take this out of context, bypass something important. So that's why it's not allowed. In the future, when it is a secure option that we can allow you to receive the permission level of someone securely and take a look at it securely, we will allow you to do it. Until then, it is not secure, so we're not allowing you to do it. Specs has a question here, which isn't marked with the emote. So whoever's marking stuff with the emote, like, I mean, I guess it doesn't have a question mark, but we'll go to it. So would love to hear about making builder-only zones or otherwise restricting errors for using things like devsips within. The only surefire way to do that right now is socially or like community-wise. A good thing that I've seen a lot of people do is they put more rules in their worlds. Now, we have had some issues with that, but they put more rules in their world. It can be anything. Like, going back to that that world, the Headless World, I can't remember the name of it, but it's, again, the one with Swap Spheres that Raivi did. There is a big sign there with a picture of Ozzy, and next to Ozzy is, like, please do logics in the nerd dome, or some sort of phrasing like that. I knew it was something simple like the sandbox, but I didn't want to be incorrect. And that is a perfectly reasonable way of doing it, right? It's a sign that says, please do logics in the nerd dome. And, like, I will do logics in the nerd dome if I ever want to do logics in that world. And if I'm not doing logics in the node, the nerd dome, then cool. I would expect someone, for example, Ozzy, to come over and be like, yo, take it to the nerd dome. That's a cultural way of doing it. If you want to restrict it technically or functionally right now, there are some things you can do. I'm probably not going to recommend any of them because they will all break depending on what you're doing. As a community, we need to come up with sort of like ways of, I'm going to cough again, 1 second. I hope I'm not getting sick, but maybe today's just a coughing day. I'll go drink some water later. I hope as a community, we can come up with ways of basically being more reasonable about rules. I have had lots of problems with having rules in my sessions with people being like hard done by or problematic about them or arguing about them. But it's just like, if I go to your house, not picking on anyone here, but Ozzy, if I go to your house and I come in with a bag of horse manure and I start throwing it everywhere, you're going to be quite annoyed with me and kick me out. You don't have a rule on the wall of your house that says don't throw horse manure in my property, but I know that that's unacceptable. And so if we start with that level of foundation, we can then move forwards, which is I now know what is unacceptable in general society. Oh, look, there's actually rules posted. I will add these rules to my general understanding of what is acceptable in this world, and then I will follow them. That's all it requires. Sometimes rules don't make sense. Like, I was watching like a border security TV show. There's lots of them, depending on which country you want to watch. And the border security UK one seems very concerned with cigarettes, right? You can only bring a certain number of cigarettes back into the UK before you have to pay duty on them. And I don't understand, like, that rule. I would respect that rule. I don't smoke, so I have no reason to break that rule. But I would respect that rule without understanding it. But I might ask what it's about, but I'd ask about it politely. I'm like, why? I don't understand. Like, I get the whole, like, don't bring guns in, don't bring drugs in, but I'm just like, they didn't pay tax, but they brought it elsewhere. Like, why are they paying tax when it crosses the border? I don't understand. So I would go look that up. I've been meaning to do that. It's on my to-do list, but I just haven't had time. Moving onwards, because I'm now ranting about horse media for a long time for no reason. Rapper says there's now a community vetted list of safe mods. I did read that. You've got the like compatibility checking, the hashing checking. Beautiful job. Again, I'm not accusing the modding community of doing anything wrong. I'm just saying, like, there is the ability for an unknown actor to intercept that string value, and it would use something similar to the tools which the modding community use. Moving on to questions and not talking about horse manure. I'm going to regret that, aren't I? Zenny, welcome to the Discord. I see you're new. Welcome to Nios. They wanted to ask, since I'm rather new to Nios relating to cameras, is there a way to get a third-person camera if I were to stream, as I could never figure that out? Yes, you need to use the streaming overlay thingy. I know that doesn't make sense because I just use the word thingy with a new user. Give me a second here and I will get you the information that you need. And if Froppy's faster, that's totally fine too. So there is a button on your home screen that is called camera streaming, and it opens up this very big confusing UI, but I don't want you to worry about it. I will not type steaming into my tutorial searcher. I will find the correct video that isn't steaming. It's streaming. And then just give you some instructions. Oh, you see Froppy beat me and I'm just typing the word steamy into my video search. So all I want you to do for the third person camera is to open the overlay, which is that camera streaming button, and then click two buttons on it. I want you to click mirror to display, which is the first button to click, and then I want you to click third person. They're very big, they're on that UI very clearly, and then I want you to peek underneath your headset at your main monitor. What the mirror to display will do is it will mirror the camera output to your actual display. And then by clicking that third person button, what you're saying is for the desktop window, as in on the actual physical monitor, display third person. But for the headset, still display third person. And that's actually what you see happening in that thumbnail as well, which is, hey, I am in first person inside that headset with my hand up to my face. And I see first person, but I've mirrored display third person, and I can see that. If you are in desktop, though, F5, as Lex says. I got it better about not wittering on sometimes. Wow. Anyway, next question. And we are over time now, so Zenny, if you have another question, please feel free to type it. Otherwise, no more questions. So Zenny's is the last question. Thank you. Rizio says, does the on-saving node have an opportunity to affect the asset being saved, or is it too late when the node is fired to impact the asset being saved? That is a good question. I will take a look. On saving node, here it is. Okay, so there is an event flow which is approximately let me take a look. Save control, here it is. Save control, reference on before unsaved, start saving. Okay, so there are two events that happen on saving. There is the on saving node, which is technically under the hood called on before save start, so you should be able to use the on saving node to affect the world. Basically, the thing goes. I'll type this. So, user presses save. We'll just user presses save on saving fires on saved fires, and then yo, the object is saved. So like that. There's the order of operations. So on saving should give you an opportunity to do something. What is important there, though, is that you can't have any nodes which will delay execution till the next update, because that might cause problems. So avoid the delay node, the updates delay node, and anything like that, because that will have problems there. That is a whole topic for another tutorial, though. It's like, yeah, cool. The update delay nodes and stuff like that. Very, very complicated. If in doubt, update delay of two usually fixes stuff that requires an update delay. So Zenny has an update which says, I'm actually asking something related to my hardware since I got a new headset. I got a G2 Omni Omniset from a buddy of mine. I wanted to know, because in the past G2 had problems, if I'm able to use it without a lot of config. I think you are. I'm not entirely sure. There are other people in the community that have a G2 Omniset, so please ask them questions and help. Just say, like, I have a G2 Omniset. Anyone got any updates or information for me? And they'll be happy to help you out. Is the Omnicep the one that has eye tracking that we don't currently support? I think it is. If it is, then it is the headset that doesn't have eye tracking, and it's for a very strange reason. No, it doesn't have mouth tracking. Yes, that's the one. So the Omnicept has mouth tracking, but it doesn't export the data in any way that makes sense for us. What it'll give you is basically a picture of the user's mouth, which is completely useless. I mean, it isn't useless for, like, people who want to develop custom mouth tracking algorithms, but what we want is a similar SDK to the Vive mouth tracker, which is it does all the logic for you and outputs a list of weights, like, is the mouth open? And when I say weights, I mean that the mouth tracker will output, I'm 50% sure that the user's mouth is open, and then we can act upon that. Whereas the Omnicept mouth tracker is like, here's a picture of your user's face. Like, thanks. That's very useful. We could put OpenCFace on that. It just sort of like it's a foundational approach about Neos is like, do we want to start doing that? And the reason behind that is because like doing that is sometimes like quite resource intensive, and we are not experts in that. We could, of course, get amazingly experts at that. We could do a bunch of research, we could do a bunch of work, we could spend months prototyping it, we could even submit scientific papers, or we could just like use existing things like OpenCFace and stuff like that, but then we have to maintain that. I don't know what G2's goals are with the mouth tracking. Like if we knew that, it might be better to sort of say like, oh hey, we actually need to stand in here. But it's a lot more work than adding another device which already does that. Let's say Prime comes out with a Prime face tracker and it outputs weights, that would be like, I don't know, a couple of days work. Outputting the mouth camera from the G2 Omnicept through all that stuff, that's more like a week to like half a month, depending on how complicated it is. I believe that's all the questions we have, so I'm going to go ahead and end things off here. Quick reminder, go ahead, drop in the questions and help channel if you have any other questions. Direct message me directly. Nack me about things. Call me Susan. Whatever you'd like to do, totally fine by me. I will see you guys next week. If you have anything else you want to add, please feel free to do it. But this will be the end of the Office Hour segment. Goodbye.